Chapter 2. Boarding School. The boarding school was more than 100 miles from my home, so our journey took us several days. We slept out under the silver moon and the bright stars. Each morning, my uncle cooked food for us over the fire, usually mutton and beans. Those meals were so good, and the time I spent with him was precious to me. I knew I was soon going to be away from all of my family. I shall never forget that journey. However, what I remember most is the morning of my arrival at Rehoboth Mission. It didn't begin well for me. As soon as my uncle reached the gate of the school, like all the other parents and relatives who had traveled far to bring their children there, he was told that he had to go. He patted me one final time on my shoulder, stroked his mustache with his other hand, and nodded slowly. "You will remember," he said. He watched me walk through the gate before he climbed back up into the seat of the wagon, lifted his reins, clucked to the horses, and drove off without looking back. He didn't say goodbye. There is no word for goodbye in Navajo. So I was left standing there, a sad little boy, holding tight against my chest the thin blanket in which my few belongings were tied. But I wasn't alone. There were many other Navajo children standing there, just as uncertain as I was. Like me, those boys and girls were wearing their finest clothing. Their long black hair glistened from being brushed again and again by loving relatives. The newest deerskin moccasins they owned were on their feet. Like me, many of them wore family jewelry made of silver, inset with turquoise and agate and jet. Our necklaces and bracelets, belts and hair ornaments, were a sign of how much our families loved us, a way of reminding those who would now be caring for us how precious we were in the eyes of our relatives. Suddenly, as if everyone had remembered their manners all at once, we began introducing ourselves to each other as Navajos are always supposed to do. We said hello, spoke our names, told each other our clans and where we were from. As you know, our clan system teaches us how we were born and shows us how to grow. By knowing each other's clan, the clan of the mother that we were born to, the clan of the father that we were born for, we can recognize our relatives. "Yate," a tall Navajo boy with a red headband said to me. "Hello. I am Many Horses. I am born to Bitterwater Clan and born for Towering House. My birthplace is just west of Chinle below the hills there to the west." Hearing his polite words made me feel less sad, and I answered him slowly and carefully. "Yate, I am Kiyeja. I was born for Mud Clan and born to Towering House. My birthplace is over near Grant's. I am the son of Gray Mustache." A round-faced girl wearing a silky shawl stepped closer to me and bowed her head. "Hello, my relative," she said. "I am Dawn Girl. I too was born to Mud Clan. I am born for Corn Clan." It wasn't always easy for me to understand what those other boys and girls were saying. Even though we all spoke in Navajo, we had come from many distant parts of Denetka. In those days, our language wasn't spoken the same everywhere by every group of Navajos. But despite the fact that some of those other children spoke our sacred language differently, what we were doing made me feel happier and more peaceful. We were doing things as our elders had taught us. We were putting ourselves in balance. Suddenly, a huge white man with a red face appeared on the porch above us. "Be quiet," he roared at us in English. Even though most of us couldn't understand the words he shouted, we all stopped talking. For a moment, before we remembered it is impolite to stare, we all looked up at him. Many of us had seen white people before, when we went to the trading post with our elders. Almost every trading post was run by white men. Most of them also had their wives and families with them. Because there were no other kids around, those Bilagana boys and girls often played with the Navajo children. Some of those white traders' children even learned to speak Navajo pretty well, at least much better than their parents. It's not easy for other people, even other Indians, to learn to speak Navajo properly. The traders always tried to use a little Navajo, but they knew very few words. Sometimes they thought they were saying one thing when they were saying something quite different. I liked to hear the funny way the trader at our post tried to talk Navajo, but I kept a straight face because it would have been rude to laugh at a grown-up. Even a grown-up Bilagana who had just said that all the sheep above the age of 6 should be in school. However, even though most of us had seen white men before, none of us had ever seen one like that red-faced white man who yelled at us on my first day at the boarding school. His skin was so red that it seemed to be burning. His hair was also that same fiery color. Moreover, his hair was not just on top of his head, where thick hair is supposed to be. It was all over his face. Among Navajos, some men may allow a little hair to grow on their upper lip, just as my uncle and my father did. But this red man had as much hair on his face as an animal. It was on his cheeks, his chin, his neck. Thick red hair even grew out of his ears. He pointed his finger and yelped more words that none of us understood. "Is that a man speaking? Or is it a dog?" one of the boys next to me whispered in Navajo. He wasn't joking. It was a serious question. The huge white man's angry shouts did sound like the barking of a dog. We all put our heads down as that red dog white man yelped and roared. Finally, he became silent, but he kept staring down at us, waiting for something. When none of us moved, but just stood there, politely looking down at the ground, he barked at us again even louder. We didn't realize that he was ordering us to lift up our faces. We couldn't understand that he was telling us we must look at him to pay attention. None of us yet had learned that white people expect you to look into their eyes, the way you stare at an enemy when you are about to attack. Among Bilaganas, the only time children look down is when they are ashamed of something. "What does he want?" a girl whispered in a frightened voice. "He seems angry enough to eat us." A dark-skinned man with a kind face walked up to stand beside the big red-white man. The red-white man growled something at him, and the dark-skinned man nodded. Then he turned to us. "Ya'at'e, my dear children," he said in Navajo in a comforting voice. "My name is Mr. Jacob Benali. I am born to Salt Clan and born for Arrow Clan." That was when all of us realized this dark-skinned man was Navajo. We hadn't even thought he was any kind of Indian at all before he spoke. It wasn't just because he was dressed like a white man, but because his hair was so short. He wore no hat, and you could see that all his hair had been cut off close to his scalp. We had never seen a Navajo man with such short hair. Back then, all Navajo men were supposed to have long hair. Realizing that this man, dressed like a white man, was a Navajo, made us look around the schoolyard. We had already noticed that there were many older boys and girls there, all in uniforms. We had thought they were Bilagana children. They were watching us silently. Now we looked at them differently, seeing that their emotionless faces looked Navajo. But none of them had come to introduce themselves. Many Horses, the tall boy with the red headband, spoke up. "My uncle," he said to Mr. Jacob Benali, using the polite form of address to show he respected this man like a relative. "Are those other children in Bilagana clothing also Navajos?" "Yes, my nephew," Mr. Jacob Benali said, "but I am sorry that I must now tell you something. Listen well. You are forbidden to speak Navajo. You must all speak in English or say nothing at all." All of us stood there in silence. Most of us didn't know any words in English. Those who did know some English words were so shocked that they couldn't remember any of them. Finally, Mr. Jacob Benali helped us. "Children," he said in Navajo, "here is a word of greeting that you can say. Watch how I hold my mouth, and then repeat it after me. Hello. Hello." All of us did as he said. We opened our mouths and made those two sounds. Hello, hello, hello. We hoped that this kind Navajo man would stay with us and keep talking Navajo. His job as an interpreter, though, was for one day, and one day only. After that, he went back to working in stables and speaking broken English. The only way left to us was to speak English. Thinking back on it, years later, I see now that it was a good policy in one sense. In the weeks that followed, we learned English much more quickly because we couldn't use our native tongue. But I can never forget how sad it made me feel when I learned enough English to understand what the angry red white man, whose name was Principal O'Sullivan, had to say about our sacred language and our whole Navajo culture. "Navajo is no good. Of no use at all," Principal O'Sullivan shouted at us every day. "Only English will help you get ahead in this world." Although the teachers at the school spoke in quieter tones than our principal, they all said the same. It was no good to speak Navajo or be Navajo. Everything about us that was Indian had to be forgotten.